From WNYC New York Public Radio, I'm Leonard Lopate. This is just one segment of the Leonard Lopate Show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 1-800-NOW-OPEN or open.com.
You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
We're kicking off our coverage of underreported election issues with Joseph Bafoumi, an assistant professor of government at Dartmouth. His research indicates that midterm elections are highly predictable, and he joins me now to discuss how that might apply on November 7th. Welcome to my show.
Thank you very much for having me.
You've written a paper in which you claim that midterm loss is a virtual truism of American politics. By midterm loss, do you mean that the president's party loses seats?
That's right. The president's party loses seats because people engage in ideological balancing. Now, I wouldn't say it's a virtual truism because we know that in recent elections, for example, in 1998 and in 2002, that didn't happen.
In fact, in 38 of the last 41, it did.
That's right. In many elections, if you go back, you can go back, say, from 1842 to 1994, you see it happening in all but one midterm election year in all those elections. And so it's something that happens very, very commonly, and it's been forgotten because in 1998 and in 2002, it didn't happen. Why did it not happen in those years? Well, my co-authors and I should mention that this is joint work with Bob Erickson at Columbia and Chris Valesian at Temple. We believe that in those years, there were these historical contingencies. For example, in 1998, the Republicans mishandled the Lewinsky affair, and that cost them seats. In 2002, September 11th cost the Democrats some seats. So you had unusual circumstances that had midterm loss not occur. But it's something that's occurred so very often that we wanted to resurrect this idea that ideological balancing is a phenomenon that scholars and others have to think about and consider when trying to understand midterm elections.
And what happened in that third exception of the last 41?
Oh, that was way back in Roosevelt's term as part of the New Deal realignment.
Mm-hmm. Well, does this apply only to the House or to the House and the Senate?
It'll apply to both, but because there are 435 districts up when we have a midterm election in the House, you can see it happening much more commonly there, whereas in the Senate, you only have a third of the Senate up, and so it's a little bit less even. You don't have large number of districts, or in this case states, to look at to see this phenomenon occurring. You have what we call a low end size or lower sample size. So if you're looking for some statistical evidence, you'll find it much more easily where you have a large sample size, as in the House, as opposed to the small sample size, about a third of the Senate, when you're looking at Senate elections.
But you said it's because of ideological balancing. What happens if we have a situation, as we have over the years, where the president is of one party, but Congress is dominated by the other party? Does the president's party still lose?
The president's party still has lost. People still have given a little bit more to the out party. And we argue that some of that is to provide for some greater degree of ideological balance. So historically, that's exactly what's happened.
And you say there's also another factor, withdrawn coattails. What is that?
Sure. So another theory is that rather than there being this kind of balancing during midterm election years being years when the House is up and a third of the Senate, but not the president, rather than having this sort of balancing occur, others would argue that it's withdrawn coattails where a president wins by some usually healthy margin in the presidential election year. Then 2 years later, when the Congress is up for election, the coattails that the president provided are no longer there. And so some people who won the House race or possibly won a Senate race will then lose because they only won or only were reelected because they were able to benefit from a president doing well.
And in some cases in elections recently, we've heard of some people who have asked the president not to try to help them because they feel that he may actually be a hindrance in their area.
That's right. So that's been happening very commonly.
Partisanship and polarization are often talked about as big factors in today's politics. Are people less likely to vote out of party in a midterm election in this climate?
Well, it certainly seems like the long-term trend is toward less divided votes and more sturdier partisanship.
Red state, blue state.
Go ahead.
I was just saying the sense of the red state, blue state divide.
Yeah, well, I think I've always felt it was kind of naive to think about states falling into two kinds of categories. But let's say we have now red voters and blue voters much more so than we used in the past. So we have more partisanship going on in the electorate. And I think that's driven by a sorting out process. Once upon a time, you had conservative Democrats in the South. Now all those conservatives are Republicans, and so their ideology and their partisanship is matching up, and so they can vote comfortably conservative and Republican. And this is also happening in the Northeast, particularly in New England, where you have liberal ideologues more so becoming Democrats, and so they're not cross-pressured by ideology and partisanship, so they can vote comfortably their party, and so you have more polarization of that sort going on in the American electorate, and so fewer people are inclined to be split-ticket voters, for example.
Is ideological balancing a conscious voter strategy?
That's a good question, and something that people haven't spent enough time thinking about, really trying to get at the underlying psychology. I don't really have a great answer for you, but I think that it doesn't take too much for a voter to know the party of the president and to think to themselves, well, we've had an awful lot of policy output in the direction of the president's party. Maybe now we need some balance. It's a good question whether it's conscious or not. I'm not really sure, but I don't think it takes a whole lot of cognitive capability for some element of the electorate. It doesn't have to be huge to say we just need a little more balance. We actually maybe want something akin to gridlock because we're just getting too much conservatism or too much liberalism in the last couple of years or 6 years or what have you.
On the other hand, we hear that incumbency is a powerful tool. Money is a powerful tool. So what does it take to get certain people thrown out? Are there special circumstances in some places rather than others?
Well, a lot of open questions as to how much money matters. Certainly, scandal gets rid of people. So you have people like Nye retiring. You have people like Foley resigning. He would have kept his district Republican if all this information didn't come out. But now that we know of this scandal, that district is probably going to go Democratic. We don't know for sure, but the Democrats didn't have a shot at all before. Now they have a real good one.
Well, it didn't work that way with Duke Cunningham. And is it likely that the Foley scandal will affect any race but the race that his name is still on the ballot for?
It's a good question. And I was thinking about this a little bit the last couple of days. I think if the media or Democrats are able to discover some sort of cover-up that's gone on from the speakership down, then that's going to hurt Republicans a whole lot. On the other hand, if they're not able to find any such cover-up, then maybe it'll only affect Foley's district, maybe another district here or there. But for the most part, it might not have it might not sort of contribute to a Democratic tide. I think we still have yet to know. It'll depend largely on how well or how effectively Democrats and members of the media can either portray or reveal the Republicans as having engaged in a cover-up. If they can't do that because perhaps there wasn't such a cover-up, then it's not going to affect many districts outside of Foley's district. On the other hand, if they find such evidence or if they can just portray it in that light, then I think it will contribute to the Democratic tide that's certain to come in 2006.
My guest is Joseph Bafumi, an assistant professor of government at Dartmouth, who has done research into the predictability of midterm elections, along with Bob Erickson and Chris Balagian. Well, does ideological balancing happen even when a president's approval ratings are very high?
It has in the past. It's a question of how much. So some midterm years will have ideological balancing occur that results in many, many seats being given to the out party, and sometimes balancing is much less so, weaker, and so there are fewer seats given to the out party. It looks like now there are a whole bunch of reasons why we would think Democrats will do well in 2006, in the House at least, well enough to gain control, it seems like, from the latest generic poll. So you have balancing that occurs, but you also have some contemporary issues that are working in the favor of Democrats, like the war seems to be aiding Democrats because it has people want change, and the Foley scandal is probably going to aid Democrats, a question as to how much, of course, as we discussed. So the president's for the Iraq war and other reasons, the president's approval ratings aren't very good. So it's all kind of works in tandem, and it looks like a lot of factors are going in the favor of Democrats. There are some factors that work in the favor of Republicans. One could argue that gas prices are going down. That can help them, but of course gas prices were awfully high. The economy is doing okay. You know, the housing sector is weakening, but other sectors seem to be improving, so that maybe will temper the Republican losses some. But for the most part, we see things going pretty strongly in favor of Democrats and probably showing a strong likelihood for the Democrats controlling the House. The Senate, it's a very different story. It's going to be tough for the Democrats to control the Senate. They'll pick up seats, but they might not pick up the 6 seats that they need to control the Senate. They might even lose a seat in New Jersey. So the Democrats will have a real tough time gaining control of the Senate. But it looks like right now they're going to be, if things don't change, and things certainly can in a month, but if things don't change, it looks like the Democrats will probably gain control of the House.
You mentioned generic polls. What are generic polls, and why are the media often really skeptical of them?
Well, there's reason to be skeptical. The generic polls are survey items that ask the American people, or sometimes some subsample of the American people, like likely voters or registered voters. They simply ask these folks, are you more likely to vote for the Democratic candidate or the Republican candidate in the coming congressional election? If you look just at those results, for a variety of reasons, because of don't know responses, because of possibly some bias, although we don't find a lot of evidence for it close to the election, but farther out there's some evidence for pro-Democratic bias in the generic polls. For a variety of reasons, just looking at those results alone doesn't give you a real good sense of the election to come. But if you take those generic polls and you analyze them correctly using regression analysis, a statistical tool, then they can be very helpful in predicting the elections. Predictions, of course, aren't pinpoint predictions that you can rely on to be accurate. They are, you have an expectation with a whole lot of error around it. So, you know, one should not argue that these forecasts are always accurate or easy to make. There's, you know, there's always error. There are a lot of different forecasts out there. But the point is, generic polls can be very helpful and very informative if people know how to analyze them correctly, using the correct statistical tools.
Your paper seems to downplay the role of campaigns, negative or positive, and actual issues in the way that people vote in midterm elections.
Well, what we want to do is look at midterm elections over a long span of time, from 46 to contemporary midterm elections, and try to judge whether or not there are some patterns in the data that we can expect to happen reliably. Now, that doesn't mean that campaigns don't matter at all or that issues don't matter. Certainly they mattered in 2002 because the party that controlled the White House, the Republicans, were able to pick up seats, probably because of September 11th. So we would concede very quickly that issues matter, that campaigns may make a difference, that fundraising certainly seems to matter in certain races, even though it's hard to find statistical evidence for it. We see it happening on a more qualitative basis all the time. But our effort was to try and look at data over a long period of time and try and find some phenomena that are likely to occur regardless of what's going on in contemporary affairs or campaigns.
Can politicians learn anything from your studies? Is there a way to counter ideological balancing? Is that what we're seeing right now? Well, the president was trying to do it, and there seemed to be a Republican strategy that got derailed a bit by the Mark Foley scandal. But right. Was that what they were thinking of?
Well, what they need to do is try and keep the president's approval rating high, try and keep the economy going strong, try and keep the American people with them on Iraq. And they've been trying to do all these things and other things, try and fight off increasing gas prices and such. So all of these things will help to temper balancing, but it seems like holding all else constant, unless there's some substantial historical event, balancing will occur. So, but they can do certain things to try and control how much it can occur. But how effective they are in Iraq and how effective they are in controlling gas prices or improving the economy, these are all open questions. Some people would say that the president does almost nothing to provide for a strong economy. Others say that the president can do some things and not others.
And so for the president and his supporters, that becomes a problem, because when people say, well, they are controlling gas prices right before the election, and then the president denies that, then he's saying, I had nothing to do with it, at the same time wants the bounce because of it.
So these are related to gas prices or the economy or the Iraq war. Always this question of how much can a president do. Even if the president can't do very much, it seems like they take a lot of credit or a lot of blame.
Joseph Bafoumi is an assistant professor of government at Dartmouth. He has done a study, along with Bob Erickson, of Columbia. And Chris Balagian, where is he?
He's at Temple.
About the predictability of midterm elections. And if they are as predictable as they have been in 38 of the last 41, well, the Democrats can be pretty sure that they're going to be taking back the House and have a slight chance of taking back the Senate. Thank you so much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Thanks for listening to the Leonard Lopate Show from WNYC, New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.